Yes, so it could be much worse. So. The need, the need for discipline, as we mentioned last night. So the need for discipline, it is for the sake of the practice, first of all. So for the sake of the practice, for the well-being of the group, which then it affect the individuals. So even though, the individual make the groups, still it is the group that is emphasized, so it benefit the individual. Like with the practice of discipline, so with the practice of Shila, in order to tame the mind, again, what do we tame first? The body and the speech, even though everything comes from the mind, right? Everything comes from the mind, but in order to tame the mind, first we tame the body and the speech. So slowing down silence, slowing down the activities of the body, mindfulness of clear comprehension, doing things, slowly and mindfully. The bodily activity, the wearing of clothes, the eating, the walking, the sitting, and so forth. So this is what slows down the mind. So that's what makes the mind less distracted. So same, discipline is for the sake of the benefiting the group, creating the harmony, making the group inspiring, so the individual is inspired. This is the main purpose. And there is also the purpose for, personally, I stress, the discipline. Another reason why I stress a lot discipline is because I want to keep my sanity during the retreat. I have to safeguard my sanity during the retreat. So. Yeah. Otherwise, the thing is, the student has to, has to be patient. Definitely, the student is patient, but the teacher cannot afford to be patient, because for the teacher become patient is the green light. Okay, I can do this, I can do that. So I can tell you a story, an example. In one of the retreat. In Bodh Gaya, once there was a student, a nun, and we don't say the name, of course. A student, anyway, was sitting on the chair. She came, we started the retreat, and then after a couple of days, she just called me. She said, tell this person to move. To change seat is disturbing. The seat you're talking about. The seat are all well arranged, people cannot move, So you have to be patient, accept. We'll change, the person will move less. She insisted, no, I cannot meditate, you must move. Okay. We'll try to do something, sort it out. So what about you moving, on the back and sitting, take the chair, sitting, on the back. Oh, that's a good idea. Change place, I say, why don't you change place so you don't have the problem of this person, distracting you. I say, oh, wonderful, yes. She said that. One day, all right. 2 days, all right. Then after 3 days, she called me. She said, tell this person to move. He's disrupting me. He's just moving all the time. He can't say no. Because I was a beginner. I was You know, as everybody struggled, therefore adjusting all the time, it was distracting her. I see the same thing, you know. Then I took her aside and said, look, you know, if you continue like this, I'm going to kick you out, you know. But of course, it's like I was talking to the wall, really, it was much of a, you know. Then I say, oh, well, after, why don't we do like this then? Maybe he can sit in your place and you can sit in his place so you don't see him. Yes, good idea, she said. Yes, that's good, so it doesn't disturb you. Change, just last a couple of days, fine, I think. After a couple of days, say, can I sit on the floor? At that point, I just gave up. I said, fine, I just surrender. Completely surrender. I said, okay, sit on the floor. Fine. Then after another couple of days, sit on the floor. I said, can I sit on the floor in the chair? No? I said, all right. When, if you wish to sit on the floor, okay, sit on the chair. Right, fine. As long as you say, you know, you don't make a big deal, you don't disturb, fine. Then sitting on the floor, she said, can when I sit on the floor, half session, no kidding, huh? Stretch my leg in as half session, sit cross leg. All right, I said, do that. So went on and on. And then when I thought it was all right, sort out everything, okay, you can sit on the chair if you wish, sit on the floor, you can stretch your leg, what you want more than this, you know, should be all right. Then, towards the end of February, and the Bodhgaya, it came this hot wind, you know. And in the Gompa, in Bodhgaya, is the curtain, right? This is the curtain to stop the people being distracted. So I was sitting, you know, there, like, really, it just came to my mind, the curtain moving. You know, I thought, I bet after the session she asked me to do something about the curtain. So after the session, she said, we must do something about the curtain. Please stop the curtain. As I called the people, I said, okay, please do that. So finish the retreat. Of course, said, no way, no more retreat with me. You know. So, but you see, if you don't put some, the discipline is not made clear for the very beginning, from the very first session, then it's very difficult to control, you see. Then you have to say, all right, you know, you have to surrender to the demand. It's too late, you know. Once you begin to scratch, and then you can't stop, yeah. So that's why through the experience in my retreat to be, you know, try to make sure from the very beginning, you know, the discipline, and make sure that from the very beginning, the discipline is kept, you know, for the sake of my sanity. Then the altruistic thought comes after. First comes my. Yeah, anyway, it is, yeah. The main benefit and the main purpose is, as Buddha say, to create, you know, to make the person attractive. You know, normally we don't see the benefit of, you know, as I mentioned, you know, so there's a story of a monk at the time of Buddha who want to hang himself because of no realizations. Hmm? And then when he was about to do it, to jump, it just came to his mind that in 20, 30 years, he kept a very good morality, very good discipline, joy, you know, joy arises in him. So it became inspiring. So he continued. So he became arahat. Yeah. So in a longer retreat is to be aware, mindful, and notice the benefit, you know, of the discipline is very, very important, you know. See, normally, one is reminded, but then after a certain, if you, you remind the benefit, but then it's to be the student who is aware of the benefit, must be aware of the benefit. So then the three things normally we experience in the retreat at the beginning. Yeah, so at the beginning of the retreat, there's the sleepiness, the distractions and pain. Yeah, so this is, as I often say, remind to the people who know already, the first thing is the mind is constantly searching for an antidote to the sleepiness, an antidote to the distraction, you know, and an antidote to the pain. But the antidote must come at the right moment. Yeah? So there must be the right moment. And that is the right moment in everything. You see, we hear, you know, whatever is subject to origination is subject to decay. When Buddha taught this simple statement, when Buddha taught this, you know, in the early days, when Buddha just say this, you know, many become, you know, generate the Dharma eye, you know, they generate insight. But we hear it, yeah, it sounds good, you know, whatever subject to origination, subject to decay. It's nice. But what else it does to us, you know? So it needs a particular condition. When the mind is ready, that statement may strike. So that's why one is to be constantly attentive. Because what may not strike today may strike tomorrow. That's why also the repetition, you know, repeating the thing again and again and again. Dharma is about repetition, you know, always new thing, you know, new information, a new topic. Yeah, when you study, that's what it is. But when you meditate, it's a repetition. So reminding again and again and again. And you remind today, it doesn't really touch. And then today, and when you remind after 5 years, 10 years, there will be the day, say, it strikes. So I heard from, you know, I heard it so many times, nothing happened. But now, how comes? Well, because it was the right time. So therefore, if you apply the antidote at the wrong time, it doesn't do anything. Apply the moment you feel sleepy, you know, like in the first session, the second session, you begin the retreat. So it doesn't really work. So first one is to go through, it's a gradual process. So first you have to see it, perceive it, and know that it's all right, it's normal. Everyone experiences since Buddha's time, during Buddha's time, all the great meditator, all the great yogi, everyone goes through. And the important thing is to see it, perceive it as something normal. Then, having perceived it as something normal, therefore, you eliminate the fear, the worry, you know, the worry that is happening to me only, right? This, that worry is happening to me, this sleepiness, you know, is happening to me only. Is distraction, you know. So about knowing that is not an exceptional thing happening to you, knowing that you are not a unique case, that is very helpful. That's what one needs to know. It's all right. Then, recognize, know that it's all normal. Sleepiness is normal. Is the reaction to the demand of the effort. So that's why you sleep. And you'll see, if you are patient, after 2-3 days, it's gone. 90% of the time, the sleepiness after a couple of days is gone. You only experience either the sleepiness coming after breakfast, you know, or after lunch. So due to some physical change, digestion, and so forth. Otherwise, it will go. Yeah. So you have to be patient, or rather, you have to be not impatient. In this particular case, you know, you should be not impatient. So these are two, you know, the same way distraction. As I say, we mentioned during the retreat. It's not that you are trying. This is very important. It's not that you are trying not to fall asleep. You are trying to be mindful of the sleep. See, you are not trying to. You may succeed, because as we say, this is for the sake of knowing. Yeah, it's for the sake of knowing. Therefore, it's not simply, you may succeed, then you become suddenly, you put lots of effort, you are very diligent, and you suddenly become awake. And so far, you are not anymore sleepy, and you are awake. And what is the usefulness of that? What is the benefit? What you really learned from that? Okay, you were sleepy, you know, you simply you made, you apply some antidote, you are awake. Yeah. So you are not trying, therefore, to fight, as I say, to try the sleepiness, but be mindful. Because being mindful of the sleepiness, it tells you the nature of sleepiness. So it feels as if it is a coat of something on the mind. That's why it feels. It feels, not that we know. We know, it's not, of course, you know, such a thing, but it feels like an oppressive, something foreigner to it, right? It feels something on the mind, something foreigner to the mind, sleepiness that is on the mind, you know, like a blanket or something. That's what it feels. So, therefore, be mindful of, it's not a question of try not to be sleepy, but be mindful of sleepiness. It tells you the nature of it. What is sleepiness? Mind itself that arises in the aspect of it. It's nothing else than the mind taking the aspect of sleepiness. Yeah, and yeah, it's that. So you are not trying to be distracted. Not to be distracted. Yeah, you are trying to be mindful of distraction, because it is mindfulness that fights, really, and distraction. So this is just unnecessary. It just creates more stress. Yeah, to be mindful too is not easy. Needs lots of effort. But the actual practice is that mindful of distraction in order to see the nature of distraction. See, as we mentioned last night. Yeah, last night we see we are not in the practice of insight in the. Trying to pacify, trying to quieten the mind, or concentrate if you like, or the shamatha, quiescence, in the practice of insight, is not much a question of establishing, but it's very much a question of allowing, to say, or sustaining, therefore knowing why you are not distracted. Sorry. Knowing why you are distracted. That's why. Knowing why you are distracted, rather than simply trying not to be. Yeah? So as it is said, with shamatha, you're trying to calm the mind, and with vipassana, you know why the mind is not calm. That's it. Yeah? So, the practice of vipassana, insight, it tells you, that's why in this particular, you practice, you alternate. Normally you see shamatha, vipassana, first shamatha, and then insight. But here, the shamatha and the vipassana is a different meaning from what we normally study or know in the Tibetan Buddhism or in the other form, you know. Yeah, it's different. You know, we use the same shamatha vipassana. So in this particular system, they try to alternate, develop together. Yeah. So you try to be, but that's exactly what you do in Mahamudra, for example, you know. As you are trying to establish the Shinesha Shamatha, trying to establish concentration by knowing by looking at the nature of what prevents you to concentrate. So therefore, no fighting. That is very much no fighting of the mind. No, you learn not to fight, to see as we to. In the process of trying to calm the mind, you see that whatever it is, because you are attentive, and therefore attentiveness means knowing. The nature of mindfulness here is knowledge, not simply bringing the mind to the present. Therefore, one, as you are mindful and present, and therefore you are developing this factor of knowledge, it's called, yeah, mindfulness. It's the factor of knowledge. You see that all these distraction, past, happy, whatever, they come uninvited. You agree with that, right? Whatever arises in our mind is uninvited. It just arises. Whether we like it or dislike, whatever arises, they come uninvited. So depend. So we can say uninvited, yeah? Depend upon cause and condition. They come uninvited, and when they go, there is no really need to. That's what we find ourselves in, wishing and hoping, you know, go away. Even sometimes, even mentally, you say, go away, you know. You may even beg them to go away, but when they go away, they don't need. So one realizes that they don't really, They don't need me to push to go away. They just go away because the nature is impermanent. So they arise uninvited and they pass without. So the meditator, as he sees more and more, of course, this is not something you see one session to session. It takes a long time. Yeah? But then that's what one sees, recognize, and therefore the calming of the mind slowly, slowly becomes, that's why you say sustaining, it's spontaneous. So, but true knowledge, not through forcing. Of course, but still there is, bringing the mind to the present, to the object, of course, there is. It's not that, you still make an effort, but together with the effort of bringing the mind to the present, always you are applying this knowing factor, this, you actually also be mindful, not, what the so-called distraction, the nature, trying to understand that's inside, the nature of distractions, together. So, therefore, slowly, more and more one let go. Yeah, so more and more one let go when things arise. One is not so afraid. Yeah? It's not so disturbing. In this way, as you know, they diminish. So, therefore, they diminish because, as we say many times, the nature of this so-called disturbing thought is they are like the waves in the ocean, that the waves in the ocean, they can be many, they can be none. Depends, calm or agitated by the power of the wind. Yeah, subsiding, it's a question of subsiding. And in the mind, that's when by emphasizing, by not clinging, not engaging, eventually this one asks, how does the mind become more and more and more calmer? By making, we can say, but actually this may contradict what I just said before, we are not really making, but just for the sake of communication, this thought subsides. So the mind become calm naturally. So become the less we engage, the less, the more the thought subsides, making the mind calm through knowledge. Through knowing the nature. Yeah. So the concept is like that. They, as we say, they very much, as we say, arise and passing, or they come and invite, it's just like that. Becoming the witness, becoming the witness and knowing the nature is a less stressing method, It's a more wise, It's a more wise. So, in a way, let the mind pacify by itself, you can say. Because as we say many times, the mind has its own life. That's what we learn, The mind has its own life. Therefore, the guarding of the mind, the way we control the mind is by guarding. That's what is controlling. Only through guarding we can control. There's no other way. We cannot manipulate, we cannot touch, we cannot tie, we cannot do anything. So the only thing one can do to calm the mind is by guarding it, therefore not ignoring. See, normally that's why we try to ignore, to forget, hoping that, certain things does not happen or will pass or something, but if we forget, we are ignoring, So we are not guarding. So guarding, therefore, is the way to. So guarding, it has also the characteristic of not going to it, Do not go into the mind, as the mind is like a burning forest, a mighty flood, a rough sea. So no going into the mind, not engage, no going. So guarding, through guarding, one does not go into the mind. This is how one stops, the emotion, the klesha, the defilements, the anger, the attachment, and so forth, no going into. So this is all guarding, Or, trying to find, it takes time to find the right, we can say find the right distance, the right distance between ignoring or being too, too attentive or going to it, Either ignoring the mind or going to it. So there are two extremes, The extreme that what we do with the mind is either we ignore it or go into it, engage. So the middle way is guard. And of course, You know, it sounds good, sounds nice, it's very inspiring, everything, but it's very difficult, you know, as we can see. So it takes a long time. And the reason is, so pay, one has to pay particular attention, you know, to be involved too much with the thinking, you know, the thought. As the thought becomes, you know, the nature of thought, totally impersonal. Yeah? Thought are completely impersonal, but as we identify, the thought becomes me. Yeah? As we say, the thought, thought has this, it creates, you know, this sense of being, so-called thought. So it is impersonal. It is repetitive, impersonal and repetitive, you know, the so-called thought. So it is very much like a parrot. A parrot? The bird, you know? The parrot is very, you know, it just repeat. It's an impersonal thing, let's say. Yeah? There's no one behind, really, as an agent. Repetitive, impersonal. So therefore the mind is, you know, becoming like a, the conceptual mind, if you're not careful, become like a parrot. I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm tired. You know, just repeat. You know, I'm depressed. So, therefore, we have to be very careful that the mind is taught, you know, doesn't become like that, like a parrot, repeated. So there is a nice gag with a parrot in the 70s. There was a nice, in the Italian TV. There is an old lady. The parrot learned who is. She taught the parrot, to, you know, to say, who is. And then she had to go to do some shopping, and she taught the parrot. Whomever, no, if someone comes, you know, ask who is. You know, to the parrot, so close the door. So the plumber arrived, talk, talk, and the parrot, who is the plumber? But he didn't open the door, right? Talk, talk, who is, that's the parrot, the plumber. Talk, talk, who is the plumber? Talk, talk. Who is the plumber? Talk, talk. Who is the plumber? Talk, talk. Who is? Can you open the bloody door? Is the plumber? Talk, talk. Who is the plumber? Talk, talk. Who is the plumber? It goes on, you know. Certain point, the plumber is so exhausted and collapse, you know? He collapses, he faints, the old lady arrives, you know, and sees the plumber. And then this person, they open the door, look at the parrot, and say, who is the plumber? So, this we can bring to the next, actually, normally they leave the parrot near the entrance, you know. Once I went to see to visit a friend of mine near in Amazon Kappa Institute, near in the town near Amazon Kappa Institute. Went to see a friend of mine, and when I came in, you know, when I entered the house, I heard a parrot. Yeah, good evening, Antonio. I said, God, how does he know my name? He said, good evening, Antonio. He said, let alone be a parrot, let alone be clever, but this is a clairvoyance. He's a parrot with a clairvoyance. And then she told me that, no, this is my brother, so my younger brother's friend, his name is Antonio, and he comes every evening to see him. And so we taught him to say, good evening, Antonio. So when I entered, he said, good evening, Antonio. So, but you see, the parrot can get used to that. Yeah, can learn. That is, is repetitive. Of course, obsessive, repetitive. That's the nature of the concept. But also, they can lead also to another aspect of the practice. The fact that even animal can able to by coming in contact always with the same sound, repeat, the ability to repeat. Why the parrot can say eventually, the name or a sentence, because the parrot has a mind. It's mind, yeah, he has a mind. And the mind, as we said, can get used to anything. Yeah, so the mind can get used to anything. So generate faith, the confidence, in the meditator. So immediately wonder, so can I know, will I learn it? May I be able to go through, like pain, for example. You see, after a couple of sessions, the mind, I wouldn't say the person, but the mind already complain. And the mind, you see, it thinks, I cannot do, and I can't. I need it so far to meditate. Yeah? So, the mind doesn't believe because be painful. Yeah? What does happen? The conceptual mind becomes very strong. So, it's painful. That's concept. It's very painful. I cannot do too much. Am I going to, they are going to be the next 4 days, geez, and so forth. So, the conceptual mind, being repetitive, obsessive, is. It makes, lose hope. I can't do it, But this is the conceptual mind. So the mind doesn't believe, the conceptual mind doesn't believe that I can actually learn, get used to. Yeah? And therefore it takes, to see this through, it takes time. See, if the mind let, if the mind, the person, the mind, let pass few days, you let pass few days, then you see that, you get used to, you get used 100%. Yeah. So therefore, from the side, from my side, the effort is to make the person believe, and therefore to make the person stick to the, start with the cushion, sit on the cushion. Don't be afraid of the pain. We'll get used to. For you, it seems impossible. So, let pass a few days. It's not that the pain goes away. It's not a question of the pain goes away, because the pain, as everything is, it comes uninvited and it goes without you, pushing it or telling to go, as everything. Therefore, it's not the question of stopping the pain, because pain, as they say, normally, Buddha Shakyamuni too. Buddha Shakyamuni, when he was a bit old, 70 or something, there are some instances in the sutra where Buddha sometimes has to lean on the pillar. It's a bit of uncomfortable. And ask, I don't know whether Mark Achan or somebody more, please give it, continue the talk. I feel a bit, so, because the body, okay. Buddha showing, it depends how you look at the Buddha, you perceive the Buddha, or you. But as a human being, so in the early Buddhism, Buddha is depicted, going to the doctor, he had a physician, a doctor, so he's the body, and old age. And you feel it, the body, the pleasant and unpleasant, except the Buddha is very detached, yeah? So Buddha is completely detached, dispassionate, and nothing disturbs Buddha's mind. Yeah. But so therefore this, we cannot, even if you become extremely realized, it's not that you avoid the pain. It's not that you avoid the sickness. It's not the realization avoid to have dreadful sickness. Yeah. The inside, the shamatha, whatever realization develop, there are certain, it doesn't fight these things. It's the mind. The body is something else. You know, you know what you learn is how to handle it. You know, so what you know is to be able to bear the pain, to get used to the pain, or to be affected by the pain, and you know, to complain, you know, lament, and so forth. So to equanimity, right? That's what you learn, you know, to generate an equanimous mind. And you learn. So you see, after a, you know, after a couple of days, you notice this one is getting more used to. So, and you get more used simply because you do it. Therefore, there are two aspects. There are two things here: one on the positive and the negative. Addiction and get used. Yeah, all both of them work exactly the same. Whether we are trying to get used to something or when we get addicted to something, how does it work? Yeah. But they work simply by doing it. Yeah. So we become addicted, not because we want to become addicted, or we don't, either we want or we don't. Addiction comes simply by doing something. That's why one has to be careful, right? So getting used to something, same. How do you get used? Not by thinking I want to get used, but just simply doing it. So when we simply do, we get used. When it's either we get used to something positive, or we get addicted to something negative. So the process is the same. Either we say to get used, it's like get used to pain, get used to anything, like in retreat, in meditation. How do we get used? By doing it. Yeah. So how we get addicted? By doing it. Yeah. That's how we get addicted. Therefore, it to be is the doing it is simply do. Therefore, there is the element of faith that is very extremely important. Yeah? So we simply do it. So, as we say, that's why you have to be careful with addiction. You have to be careful what we do. You know? And another important element that is very important in the context of meditation, when we get addicted, we know that we are addicted only after we are addicted, right? This is another important. It's not that we are about to be addicted. And you say, I'm about. If you say, I'm about to be addicted, is you are addicted. That's why you can say, I'm about to be. Yeah. That's why to be very, very careful. So we are addicted. And so we become addicted without knowing. No, without, because we are not, be careful. Because we simply did. Yeah, because we simply did it, we become addicted. You know? So, but, and we know it, this is an important element, we know it only after we did. So it's not something, the only way, you know, to prevent is not doing it. Yeah? It's not something you can, I control my drink, you know, I control whatever, I want to become addicted. Yeah? See, we want to control by doing it, but there's no way we control by doing it. We should not do it. Yeah? And because addiction, as I say, comes by doing. It's not a mental thing. Well, if it is a mental addiction, the addiction is that. Either you don't, but if you don't, the risk is high. So we are bound to, because that's how we become addicted. And then, therefore, you find yourself addicted, you know, and you don't know. When really become addicted? So you become addicted. We know that we're addicted once it happened. It happened. And we could not prevent. We could do nothing because we did, right? And then, not only that, we can't even say when it happened. You know? So let's say we suddenly become alcoholic or addicted to something. And you look back and you read, oh God, when did happen this? Can you really say when it happened? You can't, you know? It just happened. I mean, you can't say it was, you know, that particular day, that particular afternoon, you know? It just happened. Just we find ourselves addicted. That's what we do, you know? We find ourselves addicted. It's not like we find, you know, we are addicted 1 second, now I'm addicted, right? If you reflect, if we think, we find ourselves addicted, but we can, you know, it happened already, who knows, 1 week ago, long ago, right? Long ago. We'll never be able to say when. So if we take this, yeah, therefore what I say is addiction has these two aspects. One thing is it just becomes by doing it. Yeah? By doing it, suddenly I'm addicted, right? And we cannot say when exactly. We just, you know, we find ourselves addicted. Then we can look at also the positive aspect, getting used to, like meditation, because meditation is exactly that. Kom gyab means get used to. That is the term, Tibetan term for meditation is familiarizing. So familiarizing, to familiarize with something is to do it repeatedly. Yeah? So we do something repeatedly, that's all become addicted. We do something repeatedly, we become used to. But we can also call it a positive addiction, if you like. You know? So in the so by doing it, as it happens with negative things, they become the same. We see it. You see it. You do it. So become addicted to it, in the sense, become used to. Yeah, you become used to. And then let's say you become used to be mindful. You know, you become used to control yourself. Become used to, right? That's how it works. It's not a mental thing. You know, it's becoming used. Because meditation is in the field, it's not in the field of concept, in the field of doing it. Right? Is we are talking, that's meditation. It's not a simple mental exercise. You know, we're actually doing it. And then, same, as it happened with addiction, when we look, yeah? So you find yourself, suddenly you find yourself, familiar. So you sit suddenly, as if when you suddenly find yourself addicted, yeah? Same. Suddenly you find yourself used to. You can see it. There is pain, it doesn't bother you. Yeah? How comes? You just did it, you know? You just did it. Yeah? So you just did it, and you become used to, and then you know I'm used to, right? So you become used to and then realize that you become used to. It's not like, you see. Like in the same, you know, like in the example of addiction, we cannot say I'm becoming addicted, right? We cannot say. So same in meditation, we cannot say, oh, is it getting better? We cannot. So that's why in meditation, is particularly in the inside meditation, you have to avoid expectation. So you cannot meditate. Am I doing all right? It's fine. It's getting there. I'm, you know, my mind is peaceful, not peaceful, unless, you know, all this. So this is destroys. The meditation. So this is expectation. It produces tension, frustration, and so forth. Therefore, delay the experience. That's why non-expectation is extremely important. Don't expect will happen. Yeah? So, of course, you have a goal. The expectation here means not being obsessive. Yeah? So it happened by simply doing. Because that's how the mind works. The mind gets used to anything. That's why we have to be careful what we put in front of the mind. You know, that's why we have to be careful what the mind meets. If the mind meets the virtue, familiarize with virtue. If it meets no virtue, familiarize with no virtue. Good and bad habits, right? There are good habits and bad habits. It depends what the mind meets. Yeah, what in the sense for what we do, the same thing. Yeah. So developing bad habit, you know, is it doesn't take much. So the thought is as you get, you know, if we just, you know, for this coming 4 days, you just stick. If our session throughout these 4 days, we're just sticking the finger in our nose every single session. So, do you think, by mind that you have developed a certain habitual tendency with regard to that? Of course. So you go back home, and you just stick naturally the finger in your nose because that's what you have been doing throughout the last 4 days. So, naturally, it just goes. You did it, and you know, it become natural. You know, at the beginning it's a bit difficult, but then it just goes, you know. So then the finger just goes, you know, it doesn't take much. Some people with long hair, I remember when I had long hair, I used to pass hours like this to play with it. Then become very bad habit, you know. So you do something, immediately become a bad habit. See, so if you do like this for 4 days, we develop, you know, an habit. Get used to this, you can say. Yeah, so instead we sit, try to be mindful, and we get addicted to that. Yes. So it's same. So depends what we do. Yeah? So depends what we do, so the mind gets used to. And it is, as I say, a question of doing it. So it's not the question of I want to, it's by doing it. Yeah? We may want it very badly, but we don't do it, we don't get used to. Yeah? It's not, we may want very much to get, see, I want to familiarize, you know, to get used to the sitting, yeah? But we don't really do it. You give up, you know, you live after 2 days. Yeah? Therefore, it is the action of doing. And so this is, how do we know? Oh, by doing it. So by, so first they say, you know, realize, we accept, you know, we understand, it is like that. So it makes sense, right? It makes sense, it's a question of just doing repeatedly, so we get used to. But since it takes time, the point is because it takes time, so now, for example, the mind, you know, your mind must be thinking, it makes sense, that's good. But the thing is, you know, it's inspiring, let's say, it's inspiring, makes them good. So then we make tomorrow morning, right? Hopefully, whomever come back. So tomorrow morning, okay, there is some memory of the talk, and you sit, and you experience the pain, yeah? Then, at that moment, so you know that, you know, what he said, what Antonio says, makes sense. What makes you then doing it? It's faith. So then we say that doing it is what makes you actually realize, experience it. Yeah, we do and we experience. They're getting used. Yeah, but then what makes you do it? That is faith. Yeah, that is faith. Why? Because we don't know. Yeah, you don't know. We don't know. When it is the first time, we don't know. So the three things, the three ways of knowing, directly, inferentially, and through faith. That's how the way, there are three, the three ways we know the world, we know phenomena. One is through the senses, so we see shape, color, sound, so. And there's another way through reasoning. But then there's another way, we can call it knowing, still we can call it knowing, which is faith. Yeah? Then become confidence. Which is, this is, I always emphasize in the practice of meditation, is extremely important, faith. See, in Buddhism, the Buddhism emphasizes the subject faith, the mental factor of faith. The theistic religion emphasizes the object faith. Yeah? So that's why in Christianity is the gift of God, because it's the object that is emphasized. In Buddhism, it's the mental factor of faith that is emphasized. Therefore, we can say it's like a gift. Yeah? And Buddhism too has the object of faith, which is the three jewels. Yeah? So the three jewels are the object of faith. And see, you need faith, which is a confidence, the characteristic of faith is confidence, therefore the mind is clear. And because the mind is clear, when confidence arises, faith arises, the mind is clear, because it's the opposite of doubt. And therefore, why this mind is so powerful, we can say, because it's the mind that is willing to risk. What is the characteristic of faith? The willing to risk. I can give my life for Jesus, for God, or for the Dalai Lama, because I know I will go to the pure land, to paradise. But do you really know? Have you seen it? No. You know, faith, therefore, is faith is with regard to things that we don't, hidden things, we don't know. Yeah. So, therefore, because we don't know, there is an element of risk, the willing to jump, to risk. Like when we know, how do we learn to swim? With faith, isn't it? We have to jump. There is a moment of panic, no? But you have the confidence, no? Because the person, the trainer, says, don't worry, like this, like that. So, based on the speech, no? What is the cause of faith? As Saint Paul say, no? The cause of faith is the listening, no? Is the speech. Speech is the cause of faith. Speech means both. You hear it, like now, you know, the speech. That's how, this is how we generate faith. It's a dependent arising thing. Yeah. Or through reading, same. So this is how we generate the faith. There's a confidence. That is confidence. Is the confidence, therefore, the willing to, is the characteristic to risk. Because we are dealing with something that we don't know. That's why we need faith. If we know, there is no need for faith. So then the faith will increase. Yeah? The more we know, the faith they will increase. Yeah? Then becomes direct experience. But at the beginning, the faith is dealing with something that we don't know. When you were born, I was born, you know, the 30th of December. But, you know, how do you know? Your parents told you. You were not there. It's an act of faith. You know? Because you know that your parents, they will never lie to you. So this is... Therefore, faith is based on what the person says, but depends who says. Yeah? Not only the speech, but who says. It's Jesus who says, the saint who says, Buddha who says. Yeah? So we generate faith on the basis of the speech, but it's not enough. Depends who says, your guru. Yeah? So it depends on the person who says that, therefore, trustworthy, right? Is a trustworthy object. It's not just anyone. Yeah? Or a trustworthy source, a sutra or something. A trustworthy source or a trustworthy speech, depends upon this. Still, with regard to something that we don't know, yeah, karma or whatever, we believe. Yeah, we have become confident. It makes sense. So, first, the three aspects, remember. It doesn't come to my mind. Anyway. Let's go. Now, there are three aspects of faith, you know. One is, remember, the other one is the faith of belief and the faith of longing, yeah? And so, the thing is, the first part of faith, I don't remember the name, which then leads to the faith of belief, yeah? And then the faith which becomes longing, and therefore aspiration, yeah? So, therefore, faith is the cause of aspiration. That's why the Buddha say faith is like a rich seed, yeah, like a rich seed. So when the seed is rich, can grow, yeah. When we plant a rich seed, then we can sprout. Faith is exactly the seed of all quality. Faith is the seed of everything, of all our attainment. But not only in the spiritual context, in any context, in life, everything is based on faith. Because faith is what precedes aspiration. Without faith, there is no aspiration. And so we aspire, whether it is a spiritual aspiration or mundane aspiration, come from aspiration. So what causes aspiration? Faith. And what causes the effort, you know, engaging in some particular work is the aspiration. Yeah. So aspiration leads to faith, to effort. Faith leads to aspiration. So therefore, the in the practice of Vipassana, it's not that you are trying to actually establish faith, you're not forcing yourself in generating faith, that is not the purpose, but there are moments of faith. Anytime, whenever there are moments of faith, so you are mindful. And so, you know, to recognize, to see, what is the nature, the characteristic, its flavor, yeah? So when faith is present, one is mindful to recognize whether or not it is true, no? What we explained, yeah? So far. So when one is mindful, so if one is mindful when faith arises in those short moment, a long moment, one may see that faith has that characteristic. Faith is what makes you, it's faith. You become enthusiastic, aspiration. So you want to continue the practice. You want to do another retreat. Normally you want to do another retreat, but finish the present. But it's another matter, So is. And then you, because faith is, you are looking at impermanence, there are moments of no faith, and you are mindful of that, doubting. There are moments of doubting, and you are mindful of that. And so you experience both minds, and so you know how it feels with this and how it feels with that, how it feels with faith and without faith. And therefore, one begins to appreciate faith. Normally we experience faith. We all experience faith, but there is not really the appreciation, knowing what really is. Yeah? So because we don't know how it feels without. So here one knows how it feels without faith, and I know how it feels with faith. So it's the source of everything, the source of all blessing, faith. And as we say, we can even say faith is blind in a way. At the beginning, faith, people say blind faith. Yes, faith is blind because we are dealing with the thing that we don't know. Therefore, we believe. Yeah. And then in Buddhism, often people come along and say, "Well, but didn't Buddha say that you should not accept anything out of faith?" Don't accept anything I say just because I'm the Tathagata, because I'm famous. Also Buddha say that. So Buddha say, if a person without faith is like a burnt seed, Buddha said, yeah? Therefore, because faith is like a rich seed. On one hand, Buddha say, faith is the source of everything. You need faith, to practice. Without faith, you cannot even start. Extremely important. Then Buddha said, but also Buddha said, but you should not accept everything out of faith, just because, it's the authority. And we said before, we develop faith on the basis of the authority. Depends who says, right? We say that. And now we are saying that Buddha said, you don't believe just because I say it. No, I'm the authority. Isn't that contradictory? But the point is, because whenever we hear this statement, it feels as if Buddha, whenever we hear this statement, you should not accept anything out of faith, it feels like as if Buddha is encouraging us to doubt. Because we hear that sometimes there is good doubt and bad doubt, the doubt make you think and so forth, right? Make you to investigate. But when Buddha said, you should not accept everything just because I'm the Tathagata. It's not like the Wikipedia that tells you, please, if you find some mistake, let us know. You can add something. If you find some faults, inform us. And it may sound like that, Don't accept my teaching just because I'm the Buddha. You taste, they say, test them, analyze and so forth. In case you find some fault, So the reason why Buddha is saying you test my teachings is not a contradiction, it's really confirming. What other religious found person, religion say you test my religion? So Buddha say, don't accept my teaching because not to make you doubt, but because it's on the side of Buddha. Buddha say, I'm so confident. Still talking about confidence. What Buddha is doing is not talking about being doubtful. Buddha is still emphasizing this aspect. I'm completely confident, faith, in my teachings that you can test it. Of course, we may doubt, but with regard to myself, Buddha said, you know, you can challenge it, my teaching. You know, you may find fault, but with regard to myself, I'm not afraid, I'm not concerned, you can test it. I know I'm completely confident that my teachings are good. Therefore, you can put them to the test. Who else say that? What other religion say that? Test my teachings? Believe, they say. Right? What is the other religion say, test my teachings? Doubt it. Yeah? Investigate. Yeah. So Buddha say investigate because he is very confident. That's the thing. He is completely confident his teachings are perfect. Therefore, we are still emphasizing this confidence, faith. So that something which is unshakable, you know, something that is an unshakable mind, you know, that's the characteristic of faith. And therefore, why it becomes not the cause of everything? Because we can see when we practice with such a mind, you know, when we practice with such a mind, you can overcome any difficulties, right? When with this type of mind, which is needed, without which we cannot achieve any worldly or spiritually, that's what makes us to overcome any difficulties. And therefore, make a good business, if it is, you know, or, you know, achieve a realization. So, that's what makes the person overcome difficulties, like pain when you sit, you know, discomfort, unhappiness, and so forth, is the faith. And therefore, that's what is in need in the meditation. That's what makes you to continue. That's what it does. The retreat is hard, it's difficult, and yet, you know what, you know, it seems right. You know, that's what you do. At the beginning, it's like that. You know, you do it, you don't know, as if, I don't know why I'm here, but I should, isn't it? At the beginning of the retreat, when you do some retreat, you know that is the good thing. You don't know really why yet, you know, but you have the faith. And you go through. Yeah. If we conceptualize and say, tell me exactly why you are continuing the retreat, don't tell me. Isn't it? But I'm doing it. That's faith is making you do it. You don't know, but what he's talking about, it seems all right, you know. That's what is faith, beginning. Then this faith, the embryo, as we, you know, as we continue, becomes more direct experience. You know, we say, it's true now. So first we believe that it's true, I can get used to. And then we do get used to, and then the faith increases. Yeah? Yeah. So the faith increases and one continues, so become more and more stable, the practice. Yeah. So therefore we should keep this in mind. And you see, you do the 4 days, you see today, and that's tomorrow, and after tomorrow, and you see, we should notice this aspect, getting used. And you see for yourself, if it is true or not, getting used. Yeah? If your aim is big, enlightenment in 4 days, then you don't see anything, for sure. But if it's just that, getting used, you know, will I get used? If you take that, you know, then you may see something. Yeah, you may not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed. Yeah. All right, so then... Okay, then tomorrow, begin again, 9 o'clock. And tomorrow, instead, we finish at 6. Yeah. So the other 2 days, a bit longer. And the last day, again, finish at 5 o'clock. So when you go home now, please try to, if you do a small, you know, like 40-minute session before dinner, after dinner, before you go to bed, try to keep, continue the continuation, the practice, take a walk, read a book, whatever. But please try not to watch TV. So at home now you are free. So so it's up to you, you know, to control, yeah, yourself. Normally say it's good, you know, after this, take a good walk, you know, have a nice dinner, read a book, read a novel if you like, anything, it's fine, just it's better, but not images, yeah, it'll be too very distracting. And tomorrow is punctual, yeah? And so try to arrive by 8:30, something like that, yeah? Not like 1 minute to nine. 1 minute to nine with the tongue here, you know, running, that you have to roll it. So, and of course, I hope to see the same number of people. Because you know you build, you know you roll on your bed, and you think of the discomfort. As I mentioned last night, the responsibility. What is the meaning of responsibility? Is not following the like and dislike. That is. When we don't follow the like and dislike, but we do what has to be done, that's what we call responsible person, right? This is a responsible person. If we follow our like and dislike, then animal too follow like and dislike. There's not much difference. No, the animal does what he likes and he avoids what he dislikes. So what we normally do, yeah? We do what we like and avoid what we dislike. The difference between us and animal is that sometimes we do something that we don't like, but because it is useful, beneficial. Example, the retreat. We don't like, but we do it. Okay, thank you very much. Make a prayer. The thing is, the best time to make prayers and dedication is when one keep good ethic, morality. So that is the condition for the fulfillment of prayers. No? The condition for the realistic fulfillment of prayers is when we keep good morality. So that's what we have done today. Therefore, it is the best time to dedicate the merit or simply make, you know, heartfelt prayer, whether it is for you, whether it is for someone you someone you love, someone you know in difficulty and so forth, that's the best time to do the prayer and dedication. Sancho Sancho Rinpoche, Magye Pana Gye Gyuji, Kepanya Pame, Gone Gondu Belvaraju, Gye Wadi Nyudu Dham, Lama Zangye Trugyan, Droba Chigya Malubha, Di Salam Kumbaraju. The first step of the first kind of faith is admiring faith. Admiring faith, faith of belief, and longing faith. So good. Now I can sleep.